you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 157 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. Today, we get kind of a two-for-one special. I have two guests with me today, Michael Simon and Andrew Perry. The two of them presented at the ABA Tech Show on this fascinating discussion that was entitled, How to Make the Robots Work for You. And I knew that if anybody was going to talk to these guys again, it was going to have to be me, because robots, technology, artificial intelligence, that's my bailiwick. So Michael Simon is a principal at something called the Seventh Samurai, which is another kind of favorite of mine, if you know my martial arts background. He's a principal at the company of the Seventh Samurai and an e-discovery and information governance expert, and provides consulting along those lines. And he was an early adopter, or innovator rather, of using electronic evidence in cases. So he was on the e-discovery bandwagon a long time ago. And Andrew Perry is a marketing executive with a long level of experience in high technology, focusing on content management and business process automation. He actually holds a master's of law initially before he became so focused on technology. So the two of them are collaborating on a number of different projects, one which may be announced here at some point shortly. We're keeping our fingers crossed, and if that happens, we'll be sure to let you know here on The Law Entrepreneur. But in any case, they collaborated, as I said, at the ABA Tech Show, and I wanted to have them on the show today to talk about, you know, the role of technology and artificial intelligence and really robotic technology and how it may be used by solo and small firm practitioners going forward. So without any further yapping on my part, let's talk to Michael Simon and Andrew Perry. Michael Simon and Andrew Perry, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to join you.
Thank you, Neil. Glad to be here.
I'm really delighted to get this kind of two for one opportunity. Our listeners know that I ran into the two of you at the ABA Tech Show, where you presented a really interesting lunch and learn. It was titled "How to Make Robots Work for You." And you know, if you're a techie like me, any idea of making robots work for you in a law practice really kind of intrigues me. So that's one of the reasons that I was excited to have you come join us today. So let's start, Andrew, first with you, and then Michael a little bit. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, thanks, Neil. So, you know, my passion and interest is really at the intersection of law and technology. And I started my career in law some 6 years ago, starting in the criminal justice system, but then shifted to technology. And in particular, you know, my focus is on software applications that are designed to help lawyers emancipate themselves from the tedious and labor-intensive processes, you know, associated with the practice of law. And, you know, when you look at some of the recent empirical evidence, the recently published 2018 Clio Legal Research Report found that, you know, utilization rates among lawyers continue to be quite poor, 30%. And so it just sort of works out to about 2.5 hours out of an eight-hour workday. So it's clear that, you know, law firms are struggling to dedicate, you know, their time to billable work. And, you know, this is what my passion is to really help companies and organizations and solo practitioners to become more efficient in a way that they can manage information.
And Michael, how about you?
You know, as my LinkedIn profile says, I am a nerd turned lawyer turned nerd. I was kind of a techie.
My people.
Yeah, there we go. I'm amongst friends now. I feel so much better. Yeah, and by the way, folks, I'll try not to be too nerdy. I promise. There'll be no Star Trek references. We're not going to go Doctor Who on everyone. But the deal is, I was something of a tech guy, always used computers, went to law school, became a labor and employment defense trial attorney in Chicago. Loved doing that, but I found I was largely not fixing broken things and things that were staying broken because I was coming in at the end to try and just, you know, clean up the details. And I wanted to start building things again. I wanted to start fixing things and solving problems. And so I did this crazy thing in the early or mid 90s that no one ever really heard of. I quit being a lawyer to be a .com co-founder. It confounded people. Sure. And had a really great time doing that, of course, until the money ran out. Then went and bought all new shirts because lost all the old ones. and ended up doing, you know, working within big law firms and then with consultants and then within the e-discovery world to build things. And now I do that as a consultant for my clients, and I work with various companies as well to help them build the right products for lawyers to get to market with it. And been working with Andrew on doing things like the presentation we did at the tech show, and I've been greatly honored to work with Andrew. He's modest, so I'll embarrass him a little bit. He's a really big name in the industry of legal tech, and it's a great thing to be able to work with him and Indeed. See there. I got it in.
I will then further the question by asking the standard family reunion question. How are you two related? How did you two get together to work on a presentation such as the one that you did at the ABA Tech Show?
So as it turns out, both Mike and I are consultants to an organization called Abby. Abby is a global leader in document capture and text understanding. And so, you know, when we started on this project to really understand, you know, how, you know, contract analytics can help law firms surface, you know, business critical information, you know, we aligned and we've been working together, I guess, for the past, almost a year now.
Yeah.
Various types of initiatives. And we are collaborating across different, you know, projects, around thought leadership. We've jointly authored the white paper, and we continue to, you know, work together on projects of mutual interest. I mean, we, you know, we share a common sort of background. Both of us, you know, started in law and turned into technology.
Yeah. Can I throw one thing real quick? Uh-huh. And I will apologize for a little bit of the plug, but I do want to emphasize this. One of the reasons that it is great to be working with Andrew and Abby is that Abby is in the business of providing natural language processing type technology. Technology that is designed to essentially, and I'll put this in quotes, understand language like people do. And, you know, I've worked with various content understanding technologies or content extracting technologies, because that's what lawyers do. We create stuff. We work with documents. We make documents. We read documents. We interpret them. And, you know, in the e-discovery world, where I've worked for well over a decade, most of your systems you're seeing, even the most advanced ones, are treating documents and words as math. And while that can do tremendously powerful and wonderful things, it doesn't understand them in ways that people do and produces very strange results. It's one of the reasons that we work with Abby is that it can create results with their products that makes sense to lawyers, that makes sense to just general human beings.
Well, the question I was going to pose is that, you know, in almost all industries, the role of computers, and more accurately, the role of software, has taken on, you know, exponential growth and advances. However, in law was one of the late comers, I think, to the technology boom. And I'm thinking it's only now within, as you said, Michael, the last decade that we're starting to see the application of this enormous growth in computing power and software computational capabilities being applied to the problems that are addressed by law firms. Is that an accurate statement or leaning towards the truth or am I completely wrong?
You're spot on. And you know, I talk about this in an article that came out last year. I was the lead author on an article for the Yale Law School Journal of Law and Technology. Greatly honored to be working with some fabulous lawyers and friends of mine out of Hogan Lovells that we co-wrote it about a case called David Lola versus Gat. And, you know, we kind of do the Malcolm Gladwell thing, Michael Lewis thing of, you know, spin the whole big story, the big picture around a particular example, a fact, something that happened to someone. And this was about a guy named David Lola who was a contract review guy reading documents for e-discovery. It's a tough job. It's a terrible job. You're paid poorly. There's no security. You get no benefits. And, you know, you're often working in some sub basement of some place. And to make it even worse, you're not paid overtime. Why not? Because the FLSA has an exception for that. You know, if you're engaged in the practice of law, you can't get overtime. Mm-hmm. But there are a whole bunch of contract lawyers who got sick of things and decided to fight back. David Lola was one of them. Everybody else lost their case. In fact, he lost his case in the Southern District of New York. But strangely enough, the Second Circuit took the case up. Even weirder, despite the fact that it looked like a pretty standard FLSA case, and the judge at the Southern District of New York, a very well-respected judge, said, no, you know, you're practicing law. How can you get overtime? It was not in any brief. It was not even discussed at the Southern District of New York, not a part of the appeal. One of the judges on the Second Circuit said, sua sponte, hey, wait a minute. Machines can do this. Machines can review e-discovery documents. They were providing advice and telling you what to click on. How's that the practice of law? And that was their decision. They said, if machines can do it, it's not the practice of law. That's mind-blowing that we're getting decisions like that. And the reason we're getting them, you know, then we talk, when we kind of take a step back and say, how did we get here? Because we've been talking about this. In fact, one of the things I start off with in the next second section, after we talk about Lola and the case, is we've heard this all before. And I found this story from the ABA telling us we were all going to be replaced by robots. And this story is from 1963. We've been hearing this for decades. Why is it different? And I know I'm monologuing, so my apologies, but I'll just quickly say it's because the technology has finally advanced exponentially. Moore's law, processing. Kreider's law, exponentially on storage. Metcalfe's law on networks. They have all gone to past that Malcolm Gladwell tipping point to now where it's real, baby, and it's scary.
Yeah, and I think the concept that either scares attorneys or infuriates them is the idea that robots could perform legal functions. And I think we're gonna see this here as we go further, is that you have to think of this as kind of a different approach. It's not, I mean, people think of robots and we think of, you know, Lost in Space and Danger, Will Robinson kind of robot. Yeah.
Danger, Will Robinson, your case will be overturned.
Right. But if you talk about some of the technology that is in place now and being used now, almost casually, it is a robotic or an automation type technology that's being applied to achieve, you know, great results in the legal community. And I'm going to start with just the concept that just kind of swept over all of us, particularly solos and small firm practitioners, the idea of going paperless. Central to that proposal is you have to be able to digitize mounds and mounds of paper. And that process can be and thought of and frankly is a robotic process. And it's the kind of thing that Abby, cut their teeth on.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, there is certainly a significant misconception about what is robotic process automation. And certainly there's a sort of a shared, I guess, anxiety within the legal profession that somehow robotic process automation will displace the work of lawyers. And there are sort of two schools of thought, those who assert that over time, a significant percentage of legal work will be displaced by robots. Others are obviously on the other side of the equation that, in fact, robots really augment the work of a lawyer.
Sure.
And, you know, lawyers will continue to focus on, you know, higher value cognitive tasks. And as you pointed out, Neil, there are, you know, certain, you know, kind of immediate benefits in robotic process automation that can help law firms really become more efficient. And that comes first and foremost with digitization. And, you know, referring back to the Clio research report, you know, of an 8-hour workday, only 2.4 hours are realized as billable activity. So what do lawyers do for the remaining sort of 6 hours of work? And when you look at the research, they're really focusing on capturing incoming documents, you know, matter intake processes, invoicing clients, you know, organizing electronic workspaces. And these tend to be, you know, highly labor-intensive and tedious processes. And everything should start with digitization. And that is to be able to convert all incoming documents into electronic format, into machine-readable text. So that once you have machine-readable text, you can then classify and extract that information and import that information, for example, to your matter intake management system or your conflict resolution system. And that basically frees the lawyer from having to deal with some of these tedious work. And, you know, once you are able to digitize and convert documents into, you know, a full text OCR, searchable PDF, then you can further improve efficiency by, for example, redacting documents, comparing documents, all, you know, through electronic means, and moving to a paperless environment. And then once you do that, then you can also implement process automation solutions around, you know, your matter management, your records management, your collaboration, you know, processes that really frees up lawyers from the highly sort of labor-intensive and tedious work. And this is where, you know, robotic process automation, in our view, you know, delivers, you know, significant efficiency gains and enables lawyers to focus on what they do best, and that's to help their clients, you know, with their specific legal matters.
Today, I'd like to introduce a new sponsor to The Law Entrepreneur, and that's the folks at Jurisdiction. You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150. That's like the Law Entrepreneur 150 for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to run my practice. If you want to take your practice further, you need to try Daylight. Daylight keeps track of every case detail and reminds you when you need to follow up so you can focus on what matters most. To be honest with you, I can't imagine running my practice without Daylight. So say hello to a stress-free workflow and visit marketcircle.com to try Daylight now. Remember to mention that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount off your first monthly subscription.
And I do want to emphasize the importance of this to everybody. This is not just a big firm thing. This is for all lawyers. And the reason is when Andrew does a great job of describing kind of that dichotomy where the experts and the pundits sit. You know, it's odd. You would think with lawyers, we live in shades of gray. Our favorite answer to everything is it depends. And yet you've got two sides on this debate. One that says, yeah, it's going to be AI-assisted nirvana. And the other that says we're heading for a jobless robot hellscape. And yet the funny thing is, Neil, both sides are absolutely wrong because both sides are absolutely right.
Yeah.
And it depends on where you are. And, you know, when we look at how this happens, we look at the economics of our systems. You know, there is something called the winner-takes-all society that economists, sorry, I seem to be having a hard time with that word today, discovered in the 1970s. They found it mostly with sports stars and music stars. Now we have law stars where we have, you know, some lawyers that are making 10, 20 million a year. And the problem is it's not a bell curve of distribution of success. It's a power law curve that's got a huge hill on the left with a few people doing great, and then it tails off and a whole bunch of people not doing so great. And so the issue becomes in terms of how you're going to use this technology and how you can hire the robots before the hidden part of our message, before the robots fire you, because they'll take over your tasks, is to look at how do I move up the curve by taking advantage of the technology that's out there to compete better, to get rid of the stuff that takes up all the remaining hours of the day where you're not able to bill for it.
I mean, one only has to look at how we process the flow of information through law firms as recently as, you know, 10 years ago, when we were largely paper-based. And, you know, people, when they got a new matter, they got a folder off the shelf and put the client or the matter title on the folder. Hell, I bought a label maker in order to do that, you know, in a way that was more clean. And then we started organizing that folder and keeping the pleadings, you know, on the right side and the court notices on the left side and all of this stuff now. And there was an overhead associated with doing all of that, that with today's modern, again, in quotes, robotic automation technology makes all of that, you know, obsolete. And that's just within the last 10 years. Now you scan everything in, you put it in a digital folder, and you can find anything you want as long as it's searchable text.
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, you can also fully automate, you know, these transactional systems.
So absolutely.
So it's thick client intake. You know, it used to be a highly, you know, tedious and labor-intensive process. But today, whether you're a solo practitioner or a small law firm or large law firms, this entire process can be fully automated. So let's take a look at the process. You know, a potential, you know, client visits your website and, you know, fills out a request for legal advice. You know, so they fill out the intake application form online. That whole process then can be automated where the lawyer receives an automated notification that is a new matter might be coming in to the law firm. And you can, you know, create automated bots or workflows where once the information is received, an automated notification is sent back to the client that we have received the request and someone will be in touch with you. That information that can be routed to appropriate, you know, attorney for review. Is it a particular matter that would be a good fit for the law firm? And then, you know, you can send a confirming email message back to the client to set up a schedule for an initial consultation. And then the scheduling can be booked for this meeting. And so this entire, you know, process for client intake can be fully automated and digitized and, in fact, become a completely touchless, straight-through process that really frees up a lot of, time that lawyers spend on these highly sort of labor-intensive and administrative tasks.
And when we think about that in terms of reduction in staffing, which allows then those funds to be applied more efficiently elsewhere, I mean, we're doing the work of a receptionist, we're doing the work of a paralegal, and in some cases, we're doing the work of an office administrator, and starting to get into the realm of the associate attorney, what they would do. All of that being done in an automated workflow that uses several different products, sometimes tied together with other products that we've talked about over the last couple of episodes here on The Law Entrepreneur.
Right. And, you know, and also once you digitize that information and you can extract and classify the appropriate, you know, metadata from documents, you can also then, you know, perform more advanced kind of tasks. For example, you can then analyze, you know, what types of matters you're handling. You can then make determinations as to, you know, where you should invest your resources in analyzing, you know, historically the cases that you've handled. You know, you can also reduce the amount of time with respect to, you know, conflict resolution. Instead of spending a lot of administrative time to, you know, address that issue, you can also automate that process.
Well, let's dive into that just a little bit, because I think, you know, the industry collectively is getting a grip on the whole concept of digitization and process automation. And we're working towards improving those two general categories of robotic or intelligence applied processing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's once you have all that information, as you said, Andrew, the idea of being able to analyze the data you have and extract, you know, a higher level or higher order of conclusions from the data that you have, that's the next wave, is it not?
It is. I mean, so, you know, with the application of more advanced machine learning or AI technologies, you can also then surface, you know, business critical information from documents in context. So, for example, if you look at, you know, contract analytics, I mean, that's a highly, again, labor-intensive process when you look at, you know, linear reviews of contracts. Whether you're a solo practitioner or, you know, a small law firm, you may be, you know, working with large volumes of contracts. I mean, a typical, you know, Fortune 1000 company handles anywhere from between 20,000 to 40,000 contracts. And with the increased regulatory requirements, you know, compliance issues, the need to accelerate this process and also to ensure, you know, that you can mitigate your risks, you know, applying, you know, more advanced automation capabilities really improves the whole process of surfacing this critical information. So, for example, you know, again, look at the component technologies. You digitize all your contracts, whether it's your contract templates or third-party paper. Once you're able to digitize that information into machine-readable text, then you can apply entity extraction and natural language processing capabilities to identify within specific clauses and segments of an agreement specific metadata. For example, who are the parties to the agreement? What are some of the obligations within those agreements? You know, jurisdictional issues, warranties and representations in the context of those agreements. Then you can essentially evaluate these agreements relative to predefined clause libraries and identify the gaps and remediate those gaps. And therefore, you can accelerate the process of contract review, mitigate your risks, identify what needs to be addressed in a much more you know, efficient fashion. And, you know, these technologies are proven. They certainly are, you know, recognized as being able to, you know, help organizations look inside documents as opposed to just simply accessing and managing metadata.
You know, Michael, when I heard your presentation at the tech show and then subsequently read the white paper that you and Andrew authored, it struck me that contract analytics as a example of the next wave of technology is that we're at that point now that we were maybe 10 years ago when we were talking about the importance of e-discovery.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I remember when people first started presenting on e-discovery, my eyes would glaze over and I would think, you know, it really doesn't have any applicability to me. This is something for a, you know, the mega law firms to have to deal with, you know, the kinds that are processing some of the cases that are before our government today, you know, with hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, and a little solo practitioner, that's not going to have any relevance too. But now e-discovery and the basic concepts of being able to protect that data and extract data from discoverable sources is commonplace even for the solo practitioner. So, and I get the sense that the same is going to be true about contract analytics. Am I on the right?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, I do want to start with an apology, because if there were people giving presentations causing your eyes to glaze over 10 years ago, that would have included me doing
probably
that.
Probably so, yeah.
So I'm sorry. you can at least, hopefully, as you saw from the ABA Tech Show, I could do more interesting presentations, and, you know, hopefully the audience out there isn't being, you know, eyes glazed over by this. But I'll say this, you're absolutely right about e-discovery. Now, for just an example, late last year, I served on one of my most recent cases as an expert for an insurance fraud case for the plaintiff side. This is three guys with a law firm in Arkansas going up against a huge insurer, and it was about databases and what data we had to pull from them. I was able to help them win the case. You know, it's everybody now. This stuff counts because, let's face it, if you know, here, great game for the folks in the audience to play at home. Look around, or in their office, I should say. Look around your office. How many typewriters do you have? You know, we're living these days online. And if we're not online, you know, texting or IMing, we're probably working in Word or PowerPoint and Excel and sending it all by way of emails. And so, yeah, e-discovery has really come down for everyone to be a part of in many ways. And so we're at that point with contract analytics. And in many ways, contract analytics is actually a much bigger thing. Because let's face it, e-discovery comes out of litigation, occasional regulatory action. And we all remember what Abraham Lincoln told us about litigation. You know, treat litigation as you would a grave illness in your family. And by the way, I think he said that on the internet, along with when he said everything on the internet is true, right? I think it's when he said that. And so, you know, but contracts, who isn't using contracts? What business is not using them? I hope not, because they've been running it very badly.
Yeah.
You know, your audience of lawyers are using contracts. And, you know, that's where this comes across. If you're not necessarily dealing with hundreds of thousands of contracts or even tens of thousands for a big client, you're probably dealing with dozens for a smaller one, or maybe just dozens for yourself. Being able to understand that stuff, being able to make some use of it, as opposed to putting it on a dusty shelf somewhere, or a virtual version of a dusty shelf in a file share or a SharePoint site, and make use of it, understand your obligations and risks and potential gains from it. That's really big stuff.
One of the things I think that we're going to see pretty quickly here, and that's going to become adopted as just the standard, is a tool that reviews agreements an attorney's right to determine if it's compliant with a general standard for such an agreement.
Exactly. I'll
take for an example, in the family law arena, we write, you know, custody agreements and visitation agreements and parenting agreements and marital property distribution agreements. And all that gets, you know, signed and notarized and included in the divorce proceedings. Well, I can very much see, based on the contract analytics, that a tool reviews your proposed agreement and says, based on this, you know, standards, you're missing this clause, or this clause isn't worded correctly.
Wow.
Is that a likely application, Andrew?
Yes, indeed.
You can do that now.
It's not something that it's coming. It's here already.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll give you another example. With the increased regulatory, you know, obligations. So take, for example, GDPR compliance, which impacts virtually every company that deals with EU data subjects. You know, there are certain specific obligations that you have to meet in order to ensure compliance with the GDPR regulation. One of the most important one is data processing agreements between data subjects and data controllers and data processors. And so what you can do with contract analytics is basically develop a predefined set of GDPR clause libraries that incorporates all the key provisions to comply. And then you can evaluate your existing agreements by creating a logical model of those agreements within the contract analytics platform, breaking the agreements down into specific, you know, clauses and sections, and then do clause comparison between the corresponding GDPR regulations and what's in your agreement, and identify what's missing. For example, you know, are you incorporating the enhanced data subject rights? Are you incorporating the requirement to respond to data subject requests within 30 days of the request? Are you able to comply with the 72-hour breach notification requirements? And therefore, you can easily, you know, review your entire corpus of contracts, identify the gaps, and make, you know, changes to them, update your existing agreements across the board, and therefore, you know, be able to demonstrate in an auditable fashion that, you know, you're in compliance with these regulations. And that spans across different types of use cases as well. But the technology exists now.
Wow.
And it can be, you know, effectively, and it is being utilized by organizations and law firms and legal departments to streamline their, you know, contract analytics process.
And I will say, by the way, and my apologies for jumping in before, but at this point, Neil, I think it's less an issue than is the technology there than that of cost. And yeah, we're at the point where, yeah, GDPR is huge. Although I will say, my favorite privacy law firm, two friends of mine, they have a four-person law firm doing great privacy work. So yeah, it is, you know, you can do that type of work, but it's very big. Right now, in terms of the cost and the scalability and the distribution of it, we're just not quite there yet. But eventually, yes, the cost is this technology gets built out. I could see you could take what Abby has right now and build out exactly something to meet you, what you created, yeah, what you just came up with. So do me a favor. We'll just edit that out of this so no one else deals with the idea.
So nobody else has that.
But I do want to add just to what Mike just said is that this technology is actually quite affordable because this is delivered as a cloud-based consumption model.
Right.
So instead of you know, investing in prohibitive, you know, capital expenditures to acquire the hardware and the software, even a small law firm or a solo practitioner can make use of this capability because they can provision the cloud resources as they need them.
The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/law entrepreneur. I'll just give you one other quick example. By the way, you do know that I invented the floating commuter train, the one that in Japan that floats on a magnet.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I invented that in kindergarten when I was playing with magnets, and they were the opposites repel or opposite attracts, the legs repel. And I, what if you could have a car that floated on the, on that thing? That was my idea, and somehow they ran with it.
Only if you do, only if you got the patent, my friend.
If only. And just one other quick area. Let me ask you if this is, if you see growth in this area as I do. Again, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, in the practice of law, we had attorneys who actually dictated into a tape recorder and then handed that, you know, dictation tape to somebody who put those words in a word processing system that allowed pleadings and other documents to be made. Now we talk to our devices all the time. And in fact, we get mad when they don't understand us. What's wrong with Siri? She's either, what's wrong with Alexa? They don't understand what I'm saying. Do you see even more growth in speech recognition and the application of this to the process of addressing the needs of lawyers and law firms?
Oh, yes. No, the funny thing is that back when I started as a lawyer, I was this weirdo lawyer with the law firm that I was the guy who wrote a lot of stuff for people, wrote other people's briefs and things. And I wanted my own computer. And so I had my own at home. So you know, the firm gave me a computer at an empty secretarial station, but I had to be in court every day. So I was the guy sitting there in a suit and tie typing. Eventually enough clients commented on how weird that was to force the firm to put a computer in my office. I mean, even then they would come and yell at me because I wasn't dictating enough.
Right.
And so the funny thing is what it comes down to is when you're looking at something like Siri or Alexa, one of the reasons we get annoyed at them is that they are very carefully constructed systems of limited artificial, specific artificial intelligence for particular use cases, particular areas. And, you know, for Siri, for example, is really great at finding movies and movie times. So if you ask, and I've done this at events, you know, Siri, what is big data? It will literally show you a picture of the Tom Hanks movie Big and when it's available on Netflix next. You know, we get frustrated because we expect it to be like Hal without the whole, you know, killing Dave thing,
sure.
Hopefully. And it's not there yet. It's not general AI. So we are seeing more and more specific AI use cases being built out and the interfaces around them. Because, by the way, Andrew's right. I should have been more careful when I said the technology too expensive. It's not. It's building those specific use cases and the UIs and working with the experts to build it very specifically for what we need that we're still getting done and we're distributing. We will keep making this stuff better. Because we're building out those more and more specific, more targeted ontologies, the giant, you know, Uber taxonomies that build this out. Yeah, okay, now okay, folks, I apologize. I went nerd. I'm sorry.
Listen, guys, I told you that I was susceptible for going down, you know, a technology rabbit hole. And I feel like that's probably where we're heading now. So I think that's a good place for us to wrap things up. Michael, Andrew, thank you ever so much for being part of our program today. If our audience wants to reach out to you to talk about anything further that you've discussed, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Sure. So my email address is andrew.perry, P-E-R-Y, at abby.com, A-B-B-Y-Y.com. You can also visit our website, and you can actually access a lot of useful information, you know, thought leadership, white papers, blogs around this subject matter. And of course, you know, we'll be happy to address with the audience any questions that I may have about our product portfolio that, in fact, addresses virtually all the topics that we discussed, from digitization to process automation to analytics.
Awesome.
And for me, you can find me at michael.simon, S-I-M-O-N, at the following, at 7thsamurai.com. That's S-E-V-E-N-T-H-S-A-M-U-R-A-I.com. Yes, it's randomly named after my favorite Akira Kurosawa movie. Or you can find me on Twitter at Ronin Mike Simon. where, you know, I'll apologize in advance for all the stuff I say. I'll blame it. All opinions of my are my own on that, even the ones I'd like to blame on somebody else. So,
all right, guys. Thanks so very much for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you so much. We enjoyed the conversation.
Well, that will do it for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors for making this show possible, the good folks at Call Ruby Receptionists, Spotlight Branding, Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and our newest sponsor, Jurisdiction, the providers of the Next Level Law Practice Program. So take a moment to visit our show notes and hop on over to their websites for special discounts and savings and other free stuff that you can get, and just support them because they make this podcast possible day in and day out. Also, if you got a couple minutes, pop on over to our own website, thelawentrepreneur.com. We have a couple little articles there. You can also listen to the podcast itself there if you choose to. And sign up for our newsletter or our mailing list. And we don't do a lot. You know, you're not going to bombard you with emails every week. And I do plan on doing a few more this year, but we'd love to have you join our community. And in that sense, you can also go on to our Facebook page. You can find us just by searching on The Law Entrepreneur. You can find out what we got going on a daily basis, sometimes hourly, on the Facebook page. So I'd love to have you join us there. And if you have the time, last but not least, go on over to iTunes, search on The Law Entrepreneur. And if it's something that you believe in and feel strongly about, we'd love for you to leave an honest 5-star review, as well as comments about what you like and dislike about the show, because it does mean a lot to us that you are our community, our listeners, and I want to thank you for making this all possible. So we'll see you next time on The Law Entrepreneur.